Mary Louise, I'm thrilled to be chatting with you today. Welcome to The Right Question.
Thank you, Lauren. I'm so happy to be with you.
Your profession and your motherhood created the tension for your book's aboutness. You began feeling like you were making decisions that meant you were missing out on important moments in your sons' lives. We are 2 years removed from the hardcover publication of It Goes So Fast. The paperback is here. How does your book's aboutness, its philosophy even, wanting to be present for moments that just might be the last, how do they exist in your life now? How is this intentional way of living guiding you further or still?
Well, that's a big question. I am happy to report that I never again will have to make the decision about can I be around to host All Things Considered this afternoon. If I do so, I miss my son's soccer game. And if I'm in the bleachers of the soccer game screaming my head off in support of the mighty Bulldogs, then I will miss hosting All Things Considered. Those days are done. You know, the bigger picture question of just, it's very basic, but how can any of us be in two places at once? That's something I think every single person listening to this must have faced, whether or not you're a parent, whether or not you have a high school senior. But if I'm going to be good at my job and committed to that, I need to be here. And if I need to be showing up for this other person, this other aspect of my life that is important to me, that defines me, like those two things cannot coexist. My kids are both off at college now and don't need me in the way that they once did, certainly not when they were very small and I was, you know, all day long going from making toast and brushing teeth and scooting them out the door and then reversing the process on the other side. But I will say today, as one example, I had one kid writing me realizing that he has an upcoming school trip internationally and that his passport expired conveniently last week. And can I help him sort this out? I'm like, oh boy, really wish we'd known this last week when you're home on spring break, but okay. The other one, can you proofread my cover letter for this summer thing I'm applying for? It never stops, in other words. I'm not getting up and buttering the morning toast anymore, but the do they still need me? Do they give one whit that it's in the middle of an incredibly insanely busy news day here at NPR? Nope, not so much. It's just, you know, where's mom? How can she help me sort this out? So I think my takeaway is, you know, it does go so fast. It has been 2 years since this book published. I suddenly don't have any kids in the house. My life is much more my own than it has been for 20 years. But that feeling of no matter what I do, no matter how hard I work, no matter how little sleep I get, there's still only 24 hours a day, and there are more things that need to be accomplished in that than can possibly be squeezed in. That persists. That, I suppose, is eternal to all of us.
Yeah, you've written, quote, "I can't think of another relationship in one's life where you actively root for the other person to outgrow you, where the whole goal is for them to surpass you, to separate. That's the fundamental tension of parent and child." It occurred to me, Mary Louise, that this is also the relationship that one hopes, and I will say hopes, to have with their mentors and bosses in their jobs, right? You want opportunities to grow into and beyond current job titles, beyond your supervisors maybe, beyond your editors. What does growth look like to you now, Mary Louise, as a journalist and as a mother?
That's a great point. It's true. And I find I'm in my 50s now. And when I think about when I am mentoring, you know, somebody up and coming, a really eager, ambitious producer, reporter here at NPR, I always try to ask them, you know, think about what you actually love about your job. Think about the parts you don't like, but think about where you feel like you're actually bringing meaning, and make it as simple as what do I look forward to doing on a typical Tuesday? So take out of the equation what looks good on my resume, what I want to tell somebody I do at a cocktail party. Take out of it, if you can, even how much you're going to make, all of that. Just think about what would I actually be excited to get up and do on a Tuesday morning? What piece of my job is that? How can I build that? How can I get better at that? And if you had asked me 10 years ago what I really love about my job, some of the answer would remain true to this day. I love being out in the field. I love interviewing real people. I love newsmakers. I love the big, hard-hitting, interviews with officials. But I love just interviewing an ordinary person living through an extraordinary set of events. That remains true. I have found, though, that I find so much pleasure now compared to 10 or 20 years ago in mentoring and teaching, and that I learned so much from it myself. It's hard to explain to somebody else what you do and why. And so when somebody who wants to be a host or wants to be a correspondent comes to me and says, I was listening to this interview. Why did you do it this way and not that way? How did you think through that? How did you prep for that? And I think, how did I think through and prep for that? And I find that I'm learning something from having to explain it to someone else. So I love that interaction, and it's absolutely true. Nobody's pointed that out to me before, but that the relationship between parent and child, where you are rooting for them not to need you anymore, that's the goal if you do parenting right. Not that they'll never not need you, but, not need you in every single daily activity. Like, hopefully someday they'll be able to brush their teeth by themselves. It is also true in work. It's absolutely true. I will say I still listen to my NPR colleagues all the time. And when they do a particularly memorable interview, I will take it back and I'll listen to it again. And then I'll listen to it again. And I'll think, I would not have thought to ask the question in that way. That's so smart. Maybe I'll try it.
Mary Louise, I want to pivot, or I want to turn our listeners' attentions to a now infamous interaction that you had with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in 2020. I'm tempted to ask you about what that instance or that interaction taught you that you then applied in this year of no do-overs to parenting, but I actually want to flip that question around and ask you what parenting taught you that you then applied to your interaction with Mike Pompeo, to your response to him.
Well, I did the interview with Mike Pompeo in early 2020. The entire interview that was on tape lasted less than 10 minutes, and then he continued the interview by calling me into his living room and berating me for about the same amount of time as the interview itself had lasted, culminating famously in a map test. The next day, he issued a statement calling me a liar on State Department letterhead. And I had to really think about, do I respond to that? Because I have thoughts, I have things to say. And I decided to let the interview and our journalism speak for themselves. And to answer your question, I think that was a decision that my experience as a mother allowed me to make. I had had a 2-year-old. I had seen when they had a really unreasonable tantrum and where the best possible response was to ignore it. And so that's what I did.
Okay, so then pivoting back from what is sort of a lack of a reaction or lack of emotion to someone else who's giving you big emotion, I want to talk about the audiobook. I decided to prepare for our conversation not by reading your book, the physical book, but by listening to your book in audiobook form. You read yourself and which won you an Audi Award first. Congrats.
Thank you.
Because writing for audio is so different, in my experience, than writing intended to be read on the page, I'm curious about how these two experiences played out for you. When you were writing this book, were you editing for audio? I mean, I heard so much emotion in your voice while listening. I'm curious about what kind of embodied or even reactionary experience you had while reading your audiobook.
I think it is absolutely true that writing for broadcast is totally different from the way we are taught to write in school. You're taught to write in school in complete sentences with perfect grammar and complete thoughts and paragraphs and footnotes and all the rest. And obviously, when you write for broadcast, you don't write like that. You write the way people talk in sentence fragments with grammar that may be a little bit all over the place. And it's hard, as you know. You have to unlearn some of what you learned in high school and maybe college to come write for broadcast and remember just to write the way you talk. I think I've done it for so long, become so proficient at writing for broadcast shorter sentences, don't let a complex verb adjective, onto the page if a very simple one will do, that it is in fact the way I write now. And so the book is written the way I talk and the way I write for broadcast. And I had some back and forth with the copy editors at my publisher saying, but that's not a complete sentence. I'm like, yeah, and? They're like, that's not a complete sentence either. I'm like, yep, we can keep going. But so it wasn't a huge stretch to read it. It took maybe, I think it was 2 full days of just nonstop in the studio to read the audiobook. And then they have you come in and do retakes where you maybe missed a word or stumbled or mispronounced something, God forbid. It was, to me, the first time that I had the experience of seeing somebody's face. You have an audio engineer and you have a producer and editor in the studio as you track an audiobook. And while I had written a book and had an editor in New York who edited it, I had not seen her face the first time she read the words. I hadn't seen anybody's face as they read the words. And so as I was reading chapters that were particularly emotional to me, about my kids, but also, I also write in the book about the loss of my father in the year that I was capturing in this book. And I, at one point, looked up and saw the producer, and he was taking his glasses off to wipe tears from his eyes. And I thought, okay, like, this is a man who's lived a very different life and experience than I have, but something in there resonated. And that was my hope in writing this book. I know that my story is my story. But I think there are aspects of that about the feeling so pulled in too many directions and feeling like you're failing everybody you're responsible to. I'm not doing well enough at work. I'm not doing well enough as a mom. I'm not showing up for the people I need to show up with. And what am I going to do about that? There were parts of that that hit home to everyone, and I loved getting to read the audiobook because usually, I'm talking to you right now. I can't see your face. I talk to a couple million people every night hosting All Things Considered, but I can't see what's crossing their face as we speak. So that was a powerful moment to me to be able to share that.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about the importance of voice, and I want to end on a big, broad question.
Please.
Why is it important to support public broadcasting stations like Montana Public Radio right now?
Oh, thank you for that question. I continue to believe so strongly in the power of journalism, in what we do, in the partnership between what my colleagues here at NPR headquarters in Washington are doing and what you and your colleagues are doing in Missoula and in stations across the country. There's no news organization that has anything like this, that has so many people in communities reporting stories, sharing news, covering your communities in ways that inform the journalism that I can do from Washington and internationally every day. I can't ask the questions I ask of officials in Washington without knowing what's happening in communities with real people and the work that you all are doing, bringing that reporting to us. And I hope vice versa. So to anybody out there listening, does it matter? Yes. Do we need you on board? Yes. And we're grateful for everybody listening now. And if there is a way that you can find to support us through listening or through contributing and being there for your station, we need you now in this moment. We need people to be informed. We need people telling us what's going on in communities and building trust between Americans and the media, because we are you. We're Americans. We do what we do. We are responsive to and work for all of you. And I just want to thank everybody for their support and for being with us.
And thank you, Mary Louise, for all that you do. Thank you for your book. And thank you so much for joining me today.
This was a total pleasure. Bye, Lauren.